everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing you some ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Continuing a discussion on depression. Today, we're talking about depression and making bread and making a good pasta sauce. Yes, and how do they all relate together? Do you think it's just simply if you're a nice and Italian family and you sit around and you dip your bread in the pasta sauce, you never get depressed? I don't think that's the answer. The secret to all of this, or actually one of the secrets, or one of the places we explored, is a concept called alchemy. Alchemy. What is alchemy, and where does it come from, and where is how does that relate to depression? Well, we think it relates, the understanding of alchemy has a lot to do with the understanding of depression. Roberta, alchemy, a brief history?
Alchemy actually is, the roots of alchemy could be found at the beginning of human history, because ever since humans have had an ambition to elevate themselves, they have looked for methods that would help them on that path. Chemistry is an offshoot of alchemy. You see, Armand, nature allows evolution to happen in its own certain way, let's say, but people have found a way to speed up evolution, or to make things move in a way that's faster and that leads to an outcome that is bigger than what you put into it to begin with.
So alchemy can be said to be a catalytic intervention.
Alchemy is a way to obtain gold out of lead. That's the classical definition. So you begin with lead and you end up with gold. You begin with something base and not special, and you end up with something very, very special. Physical or mental.
But lead doesn't become gold.
No, it doesn't. It's a symbolic way of saying that you start with something that's normal and natural, and you end up with something special and divine.
Alchemy comes from, it can be traced back to early China, and then from there it went on to Egypt. Actually, the word alchemy comes from an Egyptian word, and it's got its roots. And the Egyptians studied alchemy quite a bit, because as Roberta was saying, they were looking for a way to get things to move along, you know, like nature itself wasn't enough. What happens if we mix this with this and we do something? But, you know, it was a bigger intention than that. It was not just the physical that was the source of alchemy. But we're going to get back to that.
Well, what people noticed is that everything follows a process, that something begins, has a middle and an end. And so from the process itself, they learned to intervene in the process in such a way that they could obtain something really spectacular rather than just natural.
Along the way, the alchemic way, alchemy, you know, it could be a man's name. Hey, there goes alchemy. Along the way, along the process, there's a number of things that happen, which we're going to tell you about, and it will help you with a better understanding, really, of the mind, the human mind, the psyche, and especially depression, which is where we're going to focus today. Now, back to what I was saying, which was what was the history of alchemy. So alchemy was about trying to find the thing that influenced everything to make it move along in a direction that you wanted it to move along. And a lot of the searching was for a spiritual thing. You know, I think back then they thought if you pray to the sun god, right, and then you make your bread better. you know. But they believed that there was a spiritual influence.
Yes, they did. And they also believed that you couldn't, that if you interfered with it, you would end up stopping the process of evolution, whereas if you learned to dance with it, to go along with it in a certain way, you could reach a level of, I guess we could call it, enlightenment, just to use a term that everyone understands, a stage that's above, way above what you started from.
So this is fine. We all had this nice thought in our mind. How will we do it? Shall we pray to Ra and ask him for his spirit to help us along? Shall we, you know, go this way? Shall we use our mind in a certain way? What is it? It was more than just chemical. But then comes along the Christianity and Crusades, which is somewhere around 100 AD or
so.
Well,
you see, Armand, so there is a knowledge that comes from science, which is observing things and understanding how they work. And then there is a knowledge that people started to realize a long time ago comes up from inside, from within the human mind. And no one knows. No one can say, well, it comes from God or it comes from this or it comes from that. And as you pointed out, people might have believed in the sun at certain times or in something else, but there is a process of knowledge that is independent of the world we can observe and that seems to just emerge from inside of us.
You know, a good example of that, Roberta, if you go to a florist and you're picking flowers and you want to make a corsage, you don't know why you pick certain flowers
right
to put them together, but some sense inside you says, no, you know, the flowers by themselves are beautiful, but the corsage is more beautiful.
I guess you could call it intuition, where, I mean, how did people come up with making wine or making pasta sauce? How did people come up with bread? How did people come up with making things? How did people come up with intuitive understanding that they had no clue, they had no outside guidance to get to? So there is an inner knowledge that seems to emerge from within the human mind, and there was a school of thought that was called gnosis, that where people learned to follow this inner emergence of this intuitive knowledge. Not only did they follow it, but they wrote it down. They classified every detail of it, everything, every step of the way, until we got to a point where we came up with alchemy, in the sense that alchemy is the written record of what people learned from this inner intuitive sense that you are describing, which
yeah.
leads to choosing the right flowers, and it leads to, you know, all of the things that people do that seem to come from this inner knowledge.
And then eventually what happened was that inner knowledge, that inner sense, became attributed to one thing or another, but then along came this whole idea of religion. And, you know, in the name of religion, a number of people realize that what we have to do is control people and what they believe. And one of the ways of controlling them was there were actually a thing called crusades, which was, let's go to all those people who have this belief that there is some force outside of themselves that is not the force that we're saying is the only force that gives you that. We want to say to you that our system of God, we the Crusaders want to tell you that whatever we think is our system of God, whether it be a two-headed God or a one-headed God or a Greek God or whatever it is, my God is better than your God, and whatever you think is coming from you, which is on the internal spirit, it really comes from the outside. It comes from your spirit, and it comes from the spirit that is given to you by my God. So the Christians came along and a bunch of other religious people came along and started killing people who thought they were alchemists. We had the Spanish Inquisition. We had the all investigations into witchcraft. And what was witchcraft? Witchcraft was an attempt to try to effect something using that other than that which is ordinarily recognized.
Well, you said it very well there, Armand, that this knowledge that comes up from within led to charting the path of spiritual development. And when religion became organized, whether it was in the Christian tradition or any of the many religions throughout history that became intertwined with power, but when religion became organized, the ministers of these religions, well, it didn't go very well with them that people could find their own spiritual development or reach enlightenment by their own search and by their own knowledge and through their own means, or that they could choose who to go to, which teacher they would go to learn this path. You see, they wanted to be the only teachers, and they wanted everyone to go only to them. And this, we're talking about 300 years B.C. to 300 years A.D. Something around that time is when religion became very hostile towards this gnosis. I call it gnosis because that's the word, but we could call it
it's
something else.
G-N-O-S-S-I-S, gnosis, right?
G-N...
Like Nochi.
Yeah, yes. Well, it's G-N-O-S-I-S, yes, gnosis.
Like it's not a silent G.
No, it's a vocal.
Not like the silent P in swim. Okay.
Right.
Okay, we're talking about alchemy, but we're really going to depression. You know, I want you to imagine that if you have a child who's depressed or a young person who's depressed, and they go to the clergy, whoever their clergy is, whether you could wear any kind of garb and worship any number of gods, whatever it is, but one who represents the clergy is going to say, bring that child into the church and flood them with the church, and that will take care of their depression.
True.
Really, it is the almost common way that we do it now. I mean, we even do the same thing. Bring that person for medication, and that will take care of their depression. That's our new religion. Or give that person democracy, and they're going to feel free and wonderful, as our government says.
But you see, Amanda, I think that whenever people find power within, those who are power thirsty without are going to try to discourage people from seeking that which would liberate them, indeed, because control is the opposite of liberation. If I want to control a group of people, I don't want them to be able to liberate themselves, quite the opposite. So what we're talking about here is people finding ways, to put it really simply, finding the ways to make themselves feel good, to make themselves happy. And those who wanted to control these people and their resources and their labor and everything else said, wait a minute, we can't allow this, because if we allow these people to liberate themselves and be happy, how are we going to control them? So we have to scare them with ideas of hell and punishment and an outside divinity that they have to abide by the rules of this divinity, etc., etc., and that way we can control them. And it worked.
For a period of time,
right,
all of the alchemists went underground. And the way they went underground is kind of really fascinating. What they did, they said, you know, people like Merlin, who you've heard of, they said, okay, wait, we have this great thing we were practicing and working on, and I almost found this way to do this or create this or be a part of this or move this along. And then they come in and they say, you're not allowed to do that because it's unholy. So what the alchemists did was they went underground and they formed a great group, and they told, it's a great story. Here goes the lead into gold story. So what did they do, Roberta?
Well, what they did was they figured out a way to escape this persecution and torture and death, because really they didn't fool around, these religions. I mean, they would just, like Armand says, the Inquisition would just take you and kill you. So what they did was they said, no, but we're not about the spirit. No, it's not our field. We deal with matter, you see. We, who have this ancient knowledge, have figured out a way to turn lead into gold. And if you, the priest, or you, the religious leader, if you want to really control people, well, you put me up in a laboratory where I can work, and I will give you the capacity to turn everything into gold and power. So, of course, now this became very, very interesting. But this was a ploy. And even though now alchemy is known as that secret science which allows one to turn the lead into gold, that's only a symbolic. It's a metaphor for the original process and pursuit, which was a spiritual one. It went to the matter only to escape religious oppression. And it's very interesting, Armand, also, because one of the processes of alchemy was to allow the opposites to join, and we are going to talk about that later in the program. But, you know, when you join the opposites, one is masculine and one is feminine.
Let's hold that till the very end, because that's really that whole thing we're going to do. Okay, because that's going to come there, Roberta. Armand DeMille here with Roberta Maria Atti. We work on these things sometimes, and the ideas stay so fresh in our brain, but there's a structure to it. We're trying to bring you an idea about depression. And we want you to understand something about depression that we learned from alchemy. And one of the things that we learn is that there's a group of people who are trying to understand what makes the world tick, what makes me tick, how do I get to be a better part of the world, how do I get to feel the good stuff, you know? And as we said, you know, that's all right. You can feel as much of the good stuff as you want, but there's somebody who's telling you, you only feel good because of me. And the one who says you only feel good because of me says if you find anybody else as a source of your goodness, you're an infidel. How does that relate to depression? Well, let's take a look at the alchemic process, the process of alchemy. And I want to use as a metaphor here, we're going to use bread, pasta sauce. They're both excellent metaphors. Bread. Of course, you start off with bread, and with bread and depression is the name of our show today. You start off with bread. Bread has all kinds of sources. You know, wheat comes from, you know, the earth and the universe and seeds and all that stuff and chemicals. But let's just start with wheat and water. You get wheat and water, and what do you do when you have wheat and water? You have two substances you want to put together, and you want to make bread. But you could have all the wheat and all the water you want, and it won't do anything. You need to catalyze it in some way. Now, what's the first step of making bread? Certainly intention. I want to make bread, right, is a good way to do it.
Well, you start with the elements, Armand. You start with two opposites, and you somehow allow these two opposites to come together and to interact. And
well, they're not necessarily. I mean, you don't always have to start with opposites, do you?
What you could say is that there is one, and that's you making the bread, that's one, that separates into two. And the two would be the flour and the water. So you have to have an initial movement, which could be you. And then you have to have two things that you're going to, whatever it is that you're going to do is going to split into two opposites. And now you have these two things that are totally different, and you bring them together. And because they're opposites and different, they annihilate each other. You see? So you don't have neither flour nor water when you allow the two of them to combine together. In a way, there is a loss initially, and I think that's where depression comes in. You have the two opposites, the flour and the water, that come together, and you've lost those two. So what do you have now? Well, you don't have anything yet, because you don't have the bread yet.
You can't say, let me squeeze the water out of the flour and I'll have flour.
Right.
And you can't say, let me squeeze the flour out of the water
right.
and I'll have good water.
It's too late.
It's too late because you kind of mixed them, like scotch and soda.
Right?
You get scotch and soda, you put them in a glass, and you don't have scotch and you don't have soda, you have something in between.
So if you didn't have a goal in mind, right there and then you could feel very sad that you no longer have the water nor the flour, because if you don't know what you're doing, well, that's just a blob of useless stuff. But now I think you were at the point where you have the
yeast,
right, the catalytic substance. Now you introduce a third element, which in alchemy was defined as the spirit, but you know, we could call it whatever works for us. But there's a third element that comes in that now starts a fermentation. And a fermentation is a process where this thing that you've made, this dough that you've made, really changes into something else.
Let me ask you a question. You know, you're right. I thought about that. You could add yeast or not add yeast, right? Because you can make flatbread without adding yeast.
Sure.
Mainly you're combining the two.
Right.
And then it's a matter of timing. It's if you know how to make bread, it's a matter of timing. But then this is the part that we found so fascinating related to depression. What it really needs to get bread to work, and when we're talking about getting a loaf, getting bread and water to become a loaf of bread, it needs two more elements. But one of the things it needs is to be kneaded.
Yes, it needs to be pounded, stretched, beaten, thrown around, twisted, distorted, pressed, oppressed, squozen, ripped and recombined. I mean, everything you could imagine that you could do. In fact, in alchemy, what they use is the word tortured. Matter has to be tortured in order to recombine and form something else. And the torture is real. The torture in anything that you look at, there is a destruction of that which you've combined before it can recombine into something else. Do you know what I found that's fascinating, Armand? If we use the metaphor of the caterpillar that turns into a butterfly, which is also similar.
Can we stick with the bread for a minute?
Sure.
Okay, just stick with, unless we make caterpillar bread. The kneading of the bread, the kneading of the flour and the water, this thing that you do to it is a very aggressive thing.
Yes.
Now, imagine you were this thing being combined. Imagine you were the entity who is now being kneaded by somebody. Do you say, oh, what a lovely thing, I'm going to become a loaf of bread? No, it feels terrible. You are being punched around, shoved around, flipped up in the air, punched, leaned on, shoved around. I mean, may have a lot of loving intention, but it is a very aggressive act that goes into a loaf of bread. I often wonder why vegetarians don't object to bread, because look at what you're doing by beating up the bread. You know, and
sure.
I mean, people who are that anti-violence of all sorts, this is a violent creation, bread.
And if you look at it in psychological terms, the depression does that to a person from the inside. Because you may not have someone on the outside that's beating you up, but certainly depression feels like someone is doing that to you from the inside. So the process that leads to a transformation into a wonderful loaf, at least in some, at some point, requires a pounding of this dough, of the stuff that is the combination of the two opposites.
And a more than a pounding, it also needs a sitting. You know, part of making bread is letting
time,
letting it just sit there.
Time is one of the factors. You cannot obtain anything without the ingredient of time.
So you push it around. First you put it together, then you wait. then you beat it up a little bit, and you wait, and then you wait before you do anything further with it, because there's a respect for the process. Now, how this relates to depression. We were looking at depression as being a feeling of being overwhelmed by something bigger than you, you know, and something is pushing you together and shoving you together. Now, an alchemic perception of depression would be, yes, you're in process. You're in the process, and the bruising and the pain that you feel is all part of a process. But as we know, a depressed person may be in a process of dying. There are many depressed people who, without any help, you know, they just fade away into nothingness. You may need, I mean, they commit suicide, they get so depressed they never go out of their house. So a beat-up bread is not good if it's not in the hands of a fine baker. In order to get past it, in order to make use of the fact that we have this thing beat up the way it is, you need somebody who understands it, who looks at it, and who says, ah, the timing is right now. Now we could try to take this and put it in an environment where it could grow.
Well, you see, and that's where people should have the freedom to when they go through a stage of depression. One could say, well, you need to look for a teacher, a guide that can help you go through that stage, because without guidance, it may be overwhelming. And this is where religion often has come in and said, well, we are the only ones authorized by divine assignment to guide you through whatever is going on with you. And alchemy is the science, if I may call it a science, maybe the art, that says it doesn't have to be through religion. It can be through other means. And the most important thing is that it has to be through a mean that you yourself find that works for you.
I was looking on the internet and I looked at the word depression. And of course, what you now have is 100,000 offerings of what will work for your depression. And even though we don't tell you you must use our offering, everybody's offering you something. The one I looked at that was really interesting is chewing the cola nut, you know, because it's got caffeine in it. Mm-hmm. You buy cola nuts, and if you chew cola nuts, you'll get rid of migraines and you will get rid of...
Oh, but Armand, almost everything out there could be used, you know, could be said to be a guidance out of depression.
Because
diet, supplements, meditation, visualization.
Pharmacology as well as psychotherapy.
Exercise, yeah. I mean, it could be anything. The point is, at least, you know, I'm only one person trying to find my way through my life, but what I've become leery of are those approaches that say it's not right to suffer. It's not, that means that something's wrong. If you're suffering, if you're depressed, it means that something's wrong with you and that you need to fix yourself. And fixing, just for fixing, may be interfering with the process. Fixing in the sense of understanding the process, finding the baker, I guess, is the goal in, from the way I understand it. Not so much to make the suffering go away, which is one of the promises of many of the modern approaches. I guess we are a culture that looks down on suffering as if it were useless for the most part.
Well, I agree with part of what you're saying, Roberta, and there's a part of it I strongly disagree with, which is that I do see depression as something you have to do something about eventually. But I don't see it as there's something bad about you.
That's what I was saying.
For being depressed. Yeah, but I see something wrong because, you know, if you're a mother who's depressed and you've got three kids at home, you got to do something about it. You
right,
know?
Right, yes. What I was saying was that for us to say that something's wrong with that mother, that's a judgment that doesn't take into account what may be going on with her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll be right back with you, my friends. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue with this, and we'll talk about bread and making a good spaghetti sauce. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. You are listening to Tifi Congo by Kali, K-A-L-I. One of my old favorites. Hey, you know, let me ask you something. We were talking about the whole concept of alchemy and how the concept of alchemy works along with the concept of depression. And here's what we're doing. We're talking about depression as being a process. Depression is not just a disease that has to be cured. Depression seems to be all over nature, in everything that's created, everywhere, at some sort in the very maturation of every being, is a death of something before an evolution or growth of something else. What we learned from alchemy is a kind of respect for this process of letting something grow without interference and guiding it however you can with the least amount of intervention, but with a definite intention for a better way of being. Now, when we get somebody who's deeply depressed, we can say, well, you know, that person's depressed. What we want to do is get them so that they could work. And you can give them enough of a medication that would make them work like a zombie. That's not the idea. The idea is we've got to get that person out of their house so they could have enough energy to feed themselves, and they may do that like a zombie. But while they are doing that, we have to add many other elements that will help this person eventually become their own medication. Now, the object of treatment of depression is to respect the process of the dying and the coming forth of a new being, which is what a depressed person generally is, and then to be somebody who kind of welcomes and celebrates that evolution. But you can't celebrate it in a way that shows your need. You know, if you go to a depressed person and you say, cheer up, that doesn't do it. What you've got to do is look at them and understand there are so many elements to a depression. You have to understand the sources of it. Some of it, I'm sure, is chemical. Some of it is environmental. Some of it is from the background. Some of it is even genetic. But the idea of it is like this is a process, a kneaded bread. In fact, I love the metaphor, you know, you need me. Could also be you need me, K-N-E-A-D, in the way you've pushed me around right and left, and I feel like you've beaten me up so much, and now just let me be and let me sit and let me emerge from this. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm Roberta Maria Atti, and we're looking at this and we're saying, you know, it also happens in cooking just about anything. Think about a pasta sauce. Think about making, because if anybody is an expert on making the great spaghetti sauces, I would say Roberta Maria Atti, except she doesn't know about the sugar. Roberta, how do you make a pasta sauce?
Well, of course, like we said before, the time element is very important, because once you combine your opposites, which are the tomatoes and the olive oil and the flavorings and the salt, most importantly, you have to let it simmer. And I think the adding of the sugar is another way of creating opposites, because the tomatoes are acidic and adding the sugar brings down that acidity. You know, as I was listening to you before, when you were describing the actual state of someone who is depressed, I was thinking, well, back to the metaphor of the butterfly, when the caterpillar spins itself into this cocoon and it locks itself up into this dark spot, and what goes on inside there, which I just recently learned, I did not realize. I thought that the caterpillar in the cocoon sprouted wings, and then once the wings are ready, out would come the butterfly. No, not at all. You know what I found out, Armand? I just found out that the caterpillar disappears. It really kind of dissolves into this kind of a black goo.
No, you mean the caterpillar.
The
right.
Caterpillar disappears completely. So what we have at the end is not a caterpillar plus wings. It's something entirely different from the caterpillar. The caterpillar disappears completely. Now, what if I, wanting to rescue the caterpillar from this dark, depressed phase where it loses itself, what if I went in there, opened up the cocoon, and said, caterpillar, I'm going to take you out of there. I'm going to give you some Prozac, and you're going to be just fine. I'm not going to allow you to go through this because it's too painful. Well, you see, then I don't think that caterpillar would have a chance of becoming a butterfly. If I were to make my tomato sauce, to go back to your metaphor, Armand, without adding salt to it for fear of interfering with the tomatoes, or if I didn't let it simmer for fear of burning it, well, the tomato sauce minus the 3 hours of cooking that it takes would not be a tomato sauce, would be a tomato salad. And by the way, there's no sugar in tomato sauce.
There is.
There is no
south
sugar
of the border.
No way.
There is. I remember.
I do not.
I know you bolognese. You don't.
Nope. No sugar in tomato sauce. But they do put a little bit of cream, which is something that no one, I mean, very difficult for people to accept that.
So what we're saying,
which accomplishes, by the way, I'm sorry, it accomplishes the same purpose.
So what we're saying is that any process of a person's mind is a part of an alchemic process. There is an evolution. There is a reason why people are in the mood they're in. And one of the things that you want to understand as a therapist, and this is where I think the word psychodetective is even more accurate than psychotherapist, you want to understand why is it that way? Why is this person this way? Why is this person at this stage? If you look at a butterfly, if you look at the chrysalis, you know, and you see the butterfly about to emerge, and you just see, oh, if I could just crack open this thing, it'll free the butterfly, but then the butterfly won't have the strength of its wings to fly. You have to look at it and understand the process. And in yourselves, my friends, if you're depressed, understanding the process has more to do with than just thinking about it. Because thinking about it is very limited. You're thinking with the eyes of someone who's in the middle of it. So you're looking in the mirror with the eyes that are looking in the mirror. Here's where the alchemist comes in. Here's where the outside person comes in. Here's where Paracelsus comes in. Paracelsus, wasn't it?
Paracelsus was the,
quite a guy.
The first physician. And you know something else, Armand, that we might want to point out is that we think of healing in terms of growth very often, and growth is an expansion of what's already there. But I think that in the case of depression, as well as when we talk about alchemy, the process implies actually transforming into something entirely new and different. And in fact, when I've seen people go through a successful therapeutic intervention dealing with depression, which requires time and patience, on the other side, we don't have the same individual minus their depression. We have a new individual. We have someone with a mind that is no longer the same mind that fell into that depression. So something magical, and I use that word, you know, because I like it, not because I'm talking about magic. Something really magical occurs in the process of allowing the depression to guide us to the right guidance that we need, which could be internal, external. It could be whatever works for us. No one can tell us what works for us.
It could be the emergence of the butterfly. You know what I mean?
Right.
I am sure somewhere inside, if there's a consciousness for that chrysalis, it's a depressed consciousness. You know, we're here, and what's it like in here?
Right.
But here's what your Roberta is saying that is kind of interesting and maybe true. It is better to have been depressed and emerged than never to have been depressed at all. It is highly possible that emergence from depression brings you to a higher state of being if you do it right, the Christian way. No, I don't mean it right. But if you do it right. You know, on Sunday I went up to a church. I tell you, it was quite of a beautiful thing, just because I was in the mood to go up, and I went to a church up in Harlem, and they were singing about Jesus. And, you know, it's so nice to be welcomed by so many people, and they said, the Jesus in me loves the Jesus in you, which is another way of saying, I like you, and I welcome you. And by using the Jesus in me welcomes the Jesus in you, they were removed enough from it that they could make the kind of contact. Well, it's the same thing with emergence from depression. You know, you don't have to ascribe it to a thing, But as you come out of it, when you go through that kneading process of being depressed and being down and not knowing where you're going to come, and then eventually you slide out of it, you're more than just a person who was depressed, got depressed, and now went back to being the person you were. You're a person who's been through war. You're a person who's gone down to the depths. You visit levels of being that you went to hell and came back.
And what that usually does is it allows a person to find some creative source within themselves, because everyone I know of that has gone through depression and has been able to find the help that they needed and come out the other side was actually surprised to come to know themselves as this creative being that they didn't know themselves to be. And very often, which is hard to believe, but very often I've heard people say, well, depression was a teacher in some way. It was a horrible experience. I would not want to go through it again, but it pushed me to look for what I needed. And thank God for that, or thank heaven, or thank earth, or thank whomever. So I'm not saying that depression is a good thing. No, I'm not saying it's to be taken lightly. I'm not saying it's that one just should surrender to it. No, but I am saying that perhaps looking at it as an opportunity to discover something about oneself, well, I don't know. I mean, that's what the alchemists would suggest.
I think, if the therapist or whoever's doing the treatment has the attitude that this is what I see in this person an emergence. This person comes to me for treatment because they are in this process of coming out of, they're stuck in a thing. Now, of course, if you give them medication and they come out of it and they go back to the way they were before, it doesn't do any good. It does somewhat of a good, but there has been no learning. You are the way you were before. However, if you do it with medication or without medication, and you do it with a self-acknowledging, self-learning process at the same time, then that depression has served you something beautiful. And even though it is hell, and you got to go through the worst thing in the world when you go through it, when you come out of it the other side, you have transcended. You are stronger. You are bigger than you were if you had never had it at all.
I think it might really be a process of self-knowledge that we are talking about, Armand, because I think we start out perhaps not knowing enough about ourselves. And through what we have to go through, well, look at Dante when he wrote that wonderful doesn't really describe it. When he wrote the Divine Comedy, it's a description of someone who has gone through that process of going down to hell, and then he finds a guide, Virgilio, and the guide takes him through hell and then purgatory, and then finally he goes to heaven. And of course for Dante it was a religious background that he needed to use, because at that time that's how people thought. But he's describing this very journey that you and I are talking about, Armand, and look at what he did after that. Dante wrote the most incredible poem that was ever written in my book, and that creativity, I guess, is one of the possibilities, because apparently after these two opposites merge and destroy each other, the processes that follow lead to creativity, open to possibilities, let's say, that were not there before.
You know, in the One of the things that you might say, and you talk very importantly about the opposites inside of all of us, you know, what we do is we try to get fixed on one side or another. You know, we try to say there are too many people in this world who will say masculine, feminine, this is what you were talking about, two opposite poles. And if I'm going to be a man, I have to be very masculine. Or if I'm going to be a woman, I have to be very feminine. It's embracing the middle place, the place in the middle, Mittelplatz, as they say in German, that is so important, seeing yourself in the middle. It's the same with food and the food you eat. I know so many people who are raw foodists, you know, and they make this claim, well, it is the least act of violence in the world, and therefore I am going to live my life in a nonviolent way. What do you think of that, Roberta?
Well, I've heard that many times from many people with very good intentions trying to take the violence out of eating. Unfortunately, there's no such thing, because no matter what we eat, there is an act of destruction. So to expect oneself to purify oneself of all violence at the table when eating is concerned, requires a denial of something that is actually essential to the process, so it does not work. In fact, what I've seen that happens more often than not is that it creates a sense of frustration and rage in the individual who is attempting to avoid frustration and rage,
which they feel towards the people who don't feel the same way.
Right.
So there's the important part. So now violence, we're saying, and violence may be too strong a word, but aggression, being kneaded, K-N-E-A-D-E-D, being a chrysalis, being ripped apart, mitosis, a process of violence, you know, all of this has to be included, because if it is, if you say an important part of the ingredient is a tumult, a shake-up, a mess is going to take place, and that mess will emerge and lead to a higher level of self, then you're ready for love. Because if you're not ready to take on the bad stuff in love, if you're not ready to have a relationship and to have the negativity in the middle of it and to feel like the relationship is over and to feel like you're dying inside relating to each other, and then watching it emerge to a higher place, if you're not ready to take it on, if you're just there to avoid all conflict, to avoid all touching of each other and harming each other and really avoided it at every level, you wind up with something that is very little chance of evolving and transcending.
It remains the same. That's right, Armand. It seems like in this universe that we live in, I don't know about other universes, but in this one, things change all the time, and if we try to prevent that, and sometimes they change through destruction, and if we try to deny that or to avoid that, we don't change. Well, you know, not changing, I'm not sure it's that much better than changing through turmoil.
But I don't think it's at all
better. I'd rather
better.
Take my chances.
I'd rather be a part of the you know, I'd like to be a part of the creation. When do I stop being a part of the creation? Is there a point that I get to where I get to be an Armand, and now I'm like this, and now I'm going to stay like this forever? You know, these stay young
but see,
forever people?
Armand, that's exactly what people are asking for. They're asking to be given something, a potion, a supplement, a diet, a mentality that is going to allow them to never change from where they are at this moment. That is such a distorted perception of what happens in reality. Everywhere we look, if things are to evolve and become organized at a higher level, this level of organization needs to be dismantled in some way, needs to be altered. How do you alter anything without dismembering it? It's impossible. The bread has to be kneaded before, I mean, the dough has to be kneaded before it can become bread. And baked. Kneaded and baked.
And the bake is sometimes the heat that you need in the middle of it, you know what I mean?
Right.
Sometimes you've got to be able to bring the heat on. Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. And you get a copy of today's show on depression and alchemy by calling 212-757-4488. Roberta?
CreativeHealthSolutions.org.
And do take a check on thepositivemind.com. Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.